He's going to know who I am. You know, that cuts into my family feud hours. I want to see Giselle ride to the paper goods.
Yay, yay. Yeah.
All right, it is that time again for the Ira Kaufman Podcast, presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, and it's starring the king of Pasco County, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm beer, Uncle Ira, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Ira, how are you today? I'm glad you're alive. Every time I call you, I'm so glad you pick up the phone. How's it going there at your Pasco estate?
You know, Steve, I can't wait to see Tom Brady in person. First of all, he better know who I am. I've been doing this since 1979, Mr. Brady. So Brady was, 6 years old or something when I started this nonsense. He's going to know who I am, Steve. So I want to see this guy. I want to see Giselle. You know I'm going to befriend Giselle. I'll show her a picture of Cosmo. That'll get me in tight with her. And I'm pulling out all the stops. Who knows when that's going to be, Steve, but I'm glad, and I don't want to hear the optic people, I don't want to hear the naysayers, I am glad that the NFL draft, it appears, will go on as scheduled in 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks, even though our party has been postponed. Steve, and you know how I was looking forward to that, seeing all our listeners and readers and schmoozing, of which I am an expert on, but... I am glad that the draft's going on as scheduled. And, Lee, you know Goodell is going to get blasted in some quarters because it's bad optics and we're in a pandemic and we don't need people drafted making big money. But, Lee, people are desperate. People want something to believe in. And there's nothing wrong if there's no health issue. There's nothing wrong with proceeding with the draft.
Well, it's bad optics for the people who don't give a damn about football. So why should Goodell care?
That was the voice of Lee DeCamper. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee is of JoeBucksFan.com. Ira is obviously a man of the world here. Everybody's supposed to know who he is, including Giselle. I can't wait to see you in the tunnel, Ira, doing that stuff you do with the family of the coaches. You're always working the wives. It's going to be magical.
Steve, one more thing I want to mention as we take this podcast. And Lee, you're going to appreciate this. Because you and I sometimes have different musical tastes, but we can agree on some people. Gentlemen, there's a man celebrating his 75th birthday today from Surrey, England. And when you talk about the greatest guitar players, Lee, of all time, yes, Lee, I'm putting him ahead of Eddie Van Halen. His name happens to be Mr. Eric Clapton. 75 for Slowhand today. What do you think about that, Isbitz? 75, baby.
Ira, what did you do on your 75th birthday? Do you remember?
I tried to go out for a bike ride. I lasted about a quarter of a mile. I had to come back home. I was all tuckered out.
All right, Sage, your podcast is presented, as we said, by Bill Curry Ford. No payments until summer. In these challenging times, Bill Curry Ford has announced the following incentive actions immediately effective on new vehicles, Ira. 0% APR for 84 months. That's 7 years, no interest. 3 months of payments made by Ford, plus 3 months of deferred payments. That's 6 months of no payments. You can check it all out at BillCurryFord.com. And, of course, Sean Sullivan, the general manager there, their staff is working diligently, adhering to all the social distancing rules in the giant showroom. They're doing all kinds of one-on-one appointments, and they'll just let you take the car for a test drive. This isn't 1995 where the salesman gets in the car with you and drives all around town. You don't have to do it that way. It's not how it goes. Their service department is open. And, you know, of course, they're a local business that's dealing with these times like everybody else. But we love them. And, Ira, we know you love that cherry red 2020 Escape from Bill Curry Ford that you cruise around in.
You know, I'm a perfect example, Steve, of what you were just talking about. They gave me the Ford Escape for 3 or 4 days, cool around all by myself with my wife. And we took it on the highway. We took it on the road. We liked everything about it. We drove back to the showroom. Sean Sullivan said, well, what do you think? And I said, you ain't getting your hands back on that Ford Escape, gentlemen. It's over. Nobody's taking this car away from me. It's been a great diversion for us, you know, and we're driving around now. There's nobody on the road. You can get from point A to point B. But, Lee, There's nowhere to go, Lee. Nowhere to go. Gas prices below $2 and no reason to load up because there's nowhere to go, Lee. I can't tell you how long I've had half a tank in my truck. it must be 3 weeks since I've had half a tank in my truck. I haven't been to the gas station since.
There are some spots, Ira, where you can actually go drive up and watch the sunset from your car. There are some of those situations around town. Up in Pasco, I know there are a couple. So you got to go check those out, Ira. You can have a romantic moment. Hopefully you haven't been in the back seat of your Ford Escape, but we won't channel 1973 for you.
Absolutely. I believe the sun's setting at about 8:05, Steve, these days. You know, that cuts into my family feud hours with Steve Harvey. You know, I don't want to miss an episode of the Cramdons versus the Seinfelds. You know, I don't want to miss it. But if I can pull myself away, it's not a bad idea, Steve, watch a little sunset. And by the way, speaking of sunrises and sunsets, Lee, I got to acknowledge something. Tomorrow morning, I think I'm going to get up at the crack of dawn, pitch dark, and get my keister over to my local Publix, because that's the day they open from 7 to 8, only for the elderly, senior citizens only. And I can't believe I'm part of that august group, Lee, but I've been told that at 6:30, they're starting to line up all the way down the road to the takeout Chinese place. And then when the doors open at 7 o'clock, you better be in shape because they go right to the paper aisle, right to the paper goods. I mean, it's unbelievable what's going on. I'm running out of toilet paper, gentlemen. That might be too much information. You know, I got to take care of business. So I think I'm gonna stroll in at about 6:55 tomorrow. I can't believe it. Can't believe we've come to that.
Two things. Number one, are you going to get beef and broccoli while you're in line? And whatever happened to the 6-foot rule? You got people lined up. I guarantee you they're not standing 6 feet apart because there's going to be a stampede to get in the door. Where are the authorities?
Lee, when it comes to toilet paper, there's about an 18-inch rule. I mean, these people are maniacal. I went in at 8:15 the other day and the aisles were cleared. There wasn't a shred left, Steve.
Ira, I'll mail you some. If you really need some, I'll mail you some. Let me know.
I was a little kid. I don't remember. But my dad always used to remind me. He was watching Walter Cronkite, CBS Evening News, and they were doing some kind of man on the street kind of thing out in Manhattan. It had to do something with the economy. I think it was something about the rising cost of coffee prices. And they asked this little old lady walking the streets of Manhattan, and you know, what do you think of the coffee prices? And she responded, "Young man, you know, two things I will not do without, coffee and toilet paper."
You know what? I'm going to vouch for that, Lee. I'm part of that group. Put me in that group, baby. That's me.
All right, Sage. The other thing we can't do without is food. And you brought up our draft party, Ira. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen at Big Storm Brewing Company at the Clearwater Tap Room. We had so many great plans for an incredible blowout. It's not going to happen for obvious reasons. But I am still working on something that hopefully rolled out this week to sort of have an interesting kind of online draft party that puts beer in the hands of Buccaneers fans, Big Storm beer. So we're hoping to do something pretty cool. If that can't work out, then we're just going to go heavier and harder on our watch parties where you will be at the Big Storm tap rooms all season long for road games in Clearwater at 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton, and in Pasco County, right by your homestead, Ira. And, of course, both locations have a full menu, and they are delivering. They're available for pickup. And, of course, you can stock up on beer at all times. The beer's brewed in Clearwater. Everything is fantastic at Big Storm. Now, I've heard, Ira, you told me that you had some chicken the other night, and you tried the Tropic Pressure Florida Ale. What's the review?
Well, the big news is that you sprung for lunch over there, Isbits, and our listeners need to know that. The guy knocked on the door. The bill was $36. I wasn't sure whether it was paid for or not. I had to go check with the guy. I said, "Is this all taken care of?" He said, "Absolutely, sir." I gave him a $10 tip, Isbits. I ain't no cheapskate. I ain't no Jack Benny. And I picked up the box, and it had a grilled cheese in there, a Reuben, fries, chips, a pickle, and a 4-pack of Tropic Pressure. Now, gentlemen, I'm not a big beer drinker like the Kemper. There isn't a craft beer that the Kemper hasn't tried. But I got to tell you, that Reuben went down very well with that Tropic Pressure. Isbitz, you're number one in my book right now. It's only going to last this week, and we'll see you. We'll see what you come up with this week. But I got it from the Pasco location near Gun Highway. It was my first time getting the food from the place, and it was outstanding, Stephen. Outstanding.
Great to hear. Ira, BigStormBrewery.com is where people can place their online order. You can pay and set up your delivery there. You don't even have to talk to anyone if you don't want to. It's a very easy situation. And, of course, like we said, they're delivering beer. I know Lee was up there at the Pasco location picking up food and beer the other day. BigStormBrewery.com. All right, Ira, we have got tons of Buccaneer stuff to get to, but here we are. We're sitting 2 weeks into free agency, 2 weeks since tampering opened, which is really the start of free agency. And Bucs fans see we got back Ndamukong Suh. Okay, we got the defensive line back, JPP, Shaq Barrett, and we lost two guys, Carl Nassib and Rashad Perriman, but nothing else except for Ryan Smith. I don't know if that really counts for much. The guy's a good special teams player on a not-so-good special teams unit. What are the remaining holes, Ira? What are the Bucs doing? They're sitting on $13 million or so in cap room, and they do not obviously want to upgrade the secondary at cornerback. Josh Norman, he gets a new team for $6 million. Ronald Darby, a very talented guy who's willing to fight for a job. Jameis is gone, so Darby, you should think there's no problem bringing in Darby. He signs for $4 million with the Redskins. The Bucs don't seem to want a veteran corner. What are the holes? What are you feeling?
I think it's been a tremendous 2 weeks for Bruce Arians, Buc fans, and everybody working at one Buc place, including the people at the ticket office, who have been ultra busy for 2 weeks, and that's a good thing. Arians couldn't have scripted this much better. Gentlemen, Tom Brady was behind door number two. They landed him. He wanted the front seven back on defense. He got it. You know, did he want Nassib? Yeah, he wanted Nassib. He can live without it. Perriman, people need to calm down about this third receiver, guys. There's 20 teams in this league that don't have a legitimate number one. The Bucs have the best tandem in football. There will be guys cut loose late in training camp. They have a chance to in a deep wide receiver draft class. They have a chance to get a guy in the third round who can help. They don't need a superstar. They need, somebody that's reliable. And using that word, that's why I think Cam Brate's going to emerge. I've heard a lot of yakking about O.J. Howard. I'm sticking to my guns. I think Brate will be more effective with Brady. I think he'll form a better rapport with Brady than O.J. Howard will. That's just my opinion. Where are the holes? To me, there's one overriding glaring hole, and Lee's going to love it when I say it. Running back. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. It's got to be running back. They're thin. They don't have a number one back. Arians is on record saying he wants a three-down back, not a third-down back, a three-down back, and they don't have one. That's the glaring need. Doesn't mean they have to take one in the first round. But there's no doubt in my mind they're going to draft a running back in the first 2 days of the draft. Lee, am I wrong?
I would hope you're right. The only other hole I can see, and I don't know if it's bigger or not, is one safety position. Unless they think Mike Edwards is going to make that much of a jump, there's one big hole in the secondary, and that's safety. I'm inclined to believe running back's a much bigger need, only because the defense played pretty well the last few weeks of the year. So maybe safety isn't as glaring as I want to believe. But, there's no question running back. That's a massive hole. You know, Peyton Barber's gone. Not that you or I or Steve are going to cry in our beach towels about that. But Arians, how many times did he get the ball with Arians? Quite a bit. So that's a big, not big hole, but in theory, a lot of carries walked out the doors.
No question. And Steve, you know, Lee mentioned Mike Edwards. I was very high on Mike Edwards, Steve, going into the season. I thought he made some plays in training camp. I thought he made some plays in preseason. They were very high on him. I think you have to say he had a disappointing rookie year, Steve. There's no way around it. Mike Edwards was disappointing. He didn't make plays. The communication skills looked a little lacking. He was out of position. I'm not closing the door on a second-year safety, Steve, but it would really help if Mike Edwards got his game together, because we don't know what's going on, you know, with the injured safety. And, Steve, Mike Edwards is going to have every chance to regain the trust of this coaching staff, but he didn't jump out the last year as a rookie the way at least I thought he would.
Yeah, simply stated, they counted on him being a starter, and he looked like a third-round pick developmental project, and that's really what it comes down to. You got to remember, the guy was a third-round pick. They were hoping for better. Todd Bowles loved him out of the gate. We heard all the stories, but in comes Edwards, and the Bucs did a typical Bucs with him. He's a safety. He's a nickel. He's hurt. He's not hurt. He's recovering. He's special teams. He's not special teams. He's back to safety. They didn't know what to do with him because he wasn't very good. He looked like Sabby Piscitelli in a lot of ways, and then he got off the field. They got rid of him. They took him off the field. So, you know, he'll have a chance, Ira. I just think I wanted to mention, playing off what Lee said, and I almost can't believe that Lee mentioned Peyton Barber as a loss. But, you know, honestly, it is when you're out there producing that much, you have to look at it as this is somebody has to replace that load. But Barber did have 6 touchdowns last year. So, I mean, he at least you can say that about the guy. You know, I agree on the running back, but it's in my craw, Ira, that this team is going to be playing in the big spotlight this year against big quarterbacks, big-time quarterbacks the Bucs are going up against, and there's not one veteran corner on the team, and they're just, looks like right now they're just going to gift those jobs to Jamel Dean, Murphy Bunting, and Carlton Davis, and just say, here you go, guys, you're going to be great. And that's hard to do. That's hard to win a Super Bowl like that.
I think your instincts are right on that, Steve. I think that is the plan. I certainly wouldn't mind having a veteran corner. He doesn't necessarily have to start. Lee, I'm not adding Josh Norman. I'm not adding a high-priced guy. But I'd like to have a veteran who has playoff experience. Lee can settle that room down. I think Kevin Ross has done a very nice job with the corners because the trajectory is up. They improved as the season went on, and that's what that's what you look for. I think, guys, let me pose this question, Lee, directly to you. With this all-in philosophy, Lee, and nobody can deny where the Bucs are in this cycle or this arc, they're in all-in. That was the headline on Buccaneers.com last week on one of the stories, all-in. And that's the team website. So we're not making stuff up over here. And, Lee, with that as a backdrop, would you be opposed to giving up maybe the Bucs' third-round pick to get back into the back end of the first round if you thought there was a running back you could get maybe at 25, you know, after picking another position at 14, a running back at 25 that you don't think would be there in the middle of the second round? Would you give up a third-round pick, Lee, if you thought you had your sights on the right running back?
No, but I would try to see if you can get someone to bite with a fourth and a, you know, a pick a year from now. But no, I would not. Because like you said, all in. If you're all in, and if your coach is going to be 68, if your starting quarterback is going to be 43, if one of your starting defensive linemen is going to be, what, 35, 34, and Ndamukong Suh, I mean, it's you're not playing for tomorrow. You're playing for today. So if you're going to be all in, just, you know, go for it. Don't be timid.
Well, that's what I'm trying to imply, Lee, is that you give up a draft pick to get a guy that you think can help you in 2020. I don't know. I mean, Jason Light prides himself, Steve. You've heard him talk about it many times on the intel that he and his scouts have developed or think they have developed around the league in terms of what they think other teams are going to do. Steve, could you see them moving into the back part of the first round if there's a guy that they don't think will be there in the middle of the second round?
Well, it's going to be harder than ever this year because of the whole coronavirus shutdown to really know what other guys are thinking and doing. And I think some of that knowledge comes from all the visits that would come, and you would see, well, who's visiting who, and you could talk to guys and maybe pressure guys and get a feel from what they were hearing at other places. And the agents have a better feel because they've been talking to their clients about who likes them. And I just think the intelligence overall this year, it'll be there, but it's going to be very different. So I don't really know. I don't know if some of those intelligence-based draft day trades that Light has done before and done very well are really going to apply this year.
You know, Lee, the more I think about this all-in philosophy, and to me, you know, bringing Sue back for that price tells you all you need to know about where this team is and its mindset. Normally, you don't reach out for a 33-year-old D lineman. Had a good season, not great, and pay him that kind of money if you don't think you can do some damage. Lee, in that regard, the more I think about it, tell me if I'm wrong, I think I would be shocked if they drafted a quarterback in the first round. I think I'd be shocked.
Yeah, the more you think about it, you're right. I firmly believe what Steve said. This is the perfect time to draft a quarterback. I know I can hear some listeners howling in the background. What are you talking about? You know, like Steve made a point. Allegedly, you have the best quarterback coaches in the league, and this guy can learn behind Brady, and you can groom him like Rodgers, like the Packers did with Rodgers behind Favre. You're not pressuring him. And in 2 years, maybe three if you listen to Light, in 2 years you hand the ball off to the kid, and it's yours, pal. Go for it. You won't find a better opportunity. But like you said, if they're all in, it's hard to sell that you're all in when your first-round draft pick is a guy that you bank on being on the bench for at least 2 years.
If you take a quarterback, you take Love at 14, even if Arians loves him and thinks he can develop him under Brady, Steve, you're giving up a chance to draft a kid at 14, either a D lineman, a running back, a safety, that will make an immediate contribution, Steve, this fall, and they think they can make the playoffs this fall. Everybody in that building, that's a hard sell, Steve. That's a tough one to draft a guy that's not going to play, and he's not, at quarterback unless Brady gets hurt. That's a tough one, Steve.
It is a tough one, I'll agree, because in theory, if Brady stays healthy, you can use your first-round pick on a quarterback next year and still get a full year under Brady and all that kind of stuff. So in theory, I get it, that you're probably better off waiting a year. And I'm glad you guys brought up this subject because Rondé Barber, who I have to say at this point, with his track record and his contacts and his extensive time that he spends at One Buck Place, he's probably the best source out there to read between the lines.
And he doesn't speak out of, he doesn't talk out of his butt, Steve. He does not.
No, he just doesn't. And usually what he says ends up coming true. When he turned on Jameis, using a figure of speech in very early March, it was obvious to me that there was no chance that Jameis was coming back here. But anyway.
That's a good call, Steve. That's a good call.
He did a sit-down with Dan Lucas of WFLA. Barber said this about the draft. Now, this was before they chose Joe Haig in free agency, but that guy is not impressing anybody as a superstar.
Right.
So Dan Lucas asks him, where does he see the Bucs now in the draft after these changes and Tom Brady? And Rondé Barber says, to me, I'm quoting now, to me, Donovan Smith is probably the most untalked about aspect of this Tom Brady signing. And then Rondé Barber starts laughing, Ira. He can't control himself. He literally starts laughing. And he says, quote, he needs to be really good from here on out. And he goes on to say that potential we see all the time from Smith needs to be consistently good. And then he says, but yeah, I'd say they stick there at number 14 and draft a tackle. Offensive tackle. And then he says they may try to make a run at quarterback. I doubt they do it in the first round. I wouldn't be surprised if they do it on the second day of the draft. But to me, if you're looking for a place to get better real quick, it's the offensive line. And Barber says, you know, the NFL has shown that if you draft an offensive lineman that high, he's going to be a quick impact guy who can help you for a long time. So, you know, Rondé Barber's out there saying that he thinks they might make a run at quarterback on day two of the draft.
You know, speaking of the tackle position, Lee, I'm trying to parse Barber's statements. And, Lee, I think what he might be saying is you draft a versatile tackle. He starts at right tackle in 2020. And then we'll see what's going on with Donovan Smith, but the guy needs to have the capability of switching over to left tackle in future years, and they dump Donovan Smith. Lee, that's the way I'm looking at what Rondé's saying.
I don't think you're wrong whatsoever. I think that's exactly what he's saying. Now, that's not to say they're going to get rid of Donovan Smith. Well, basically what it means, to me is, you know, after this year, Donovan Smith's salary is no longer guaranteed.
That's right.
So basically, they're putting him on notice. Like, hey, if you don't, and I'm not anti-Donovan Smith like so many people are, but I think the message is clear. You know, Mr. Brady is going to tell us, Donovan, if you're going to come back in 2021. So you better bust your tail because, number one, we'll have somebody to replace you. Number two, you've got to satisfy the GOAT.
Steve, how much pressure do you think this offensive line is going to feel blocking in front of Brady, knowing that one blown assignment could lead to a knee injury for the face of the franchise? Steve, the pressure's been ramped up on these guys in front of Brady.
Oh, it's extraordinary, and I completely agree with Lee. This essentially becomes a contract year for Donovan Smith. No more guaranteed money. Either play like you're a star left tackle or you're gone next year. We'll save some money and go elsewhere. So the pressure is going to be immense. And, you're right. I mean, nope. Because if you let up the sack that ends Tom Brady's career, that's how you'll be known for the rest of your days and for the history of the NFL. I think, Ira, two things I wanted to bring to your attention. One, you mentioned tickets. I know a lot of hype circulates, and I'm not one to really believe anything until I really see it or understand it. There are tons of tickets available at Buccaneers.com. In every section, you can get nice seats, even the cheap ones, season tickets. So I know they got a lot of people looking a couple of weeks ago, but a lot of people buying, that's another story. I'm sure they had sales, but is there some mad rush and waiting list of Bucks tickets? No, there's not. So I encourage anybody who's interested to go look at it.
Yes. Who said that was going to happen? Who said that was going to happen? This guy.
I believe you did.
Yeah.
And, Lee, you've talked about that there's always a lag, right? There's always a lag between team success, and they haven't had any team success yet. They haven't had it. They haven't proven it. Right now it's just on paper, just like it was on paper after the 2016 season. Everybody was excited. But, Lee, there's always going to be a lag, right, between success on the field and the response from the fan base. I think that's especially in Florida, Lee.
There should be a lag because we've been sold a bill of goods how many times, and they haven't been back to the playoffs for, 12 years? So that's number one. Number two, and I know Ira and I, we go back and forth about this, we just live in different times. Across the board, sports in general, the attendance is less and less. Not just the Bucs, not just the NFL, not just college football, all sports across the board. Less than, attendance goes down, down, down. The revenue produced from gate receipts in the NFL has dropped for 16 consecutive seasons. May not be a lot, but it's drip, 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 drip. It's continued to drop the last six, maybe the last 11. I know it's double digits, last 11 seasons. So I just think we live in a different age that even with Brady here, there's going to be a good chunk of the potential ticket-buying fan base, show me. Let's see it. Let's see some wins. Then I might go out and buy some tickets. I just think we just live in, 2020 is a whole lot different than 1975. Call me a Debbie Downer, but I just think we live in different times, and that's why I don't really put a whole lot of stock in attendance. And, by the way, neither do the owners, because if attendance was really important, they never would have gone away with blackouts. You'd still have blackouts, and they did away with those, 5 years ago?
Good point, Lee. Hey, Steve, one thing I want to add on the Antonio Brown angle, it's clear, and it's clear from what Jason Light said today, and he's not going to overrule Bruce Arians. I mean, it's just not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
He's not going to overrule Bruce if Bruce says, go get me some half and a half from the fridge.
Yeah. You're right, Steve, and Arians didn't mince any words about Brown. He's not common. Forget it. Move on. Next subject. Nothing to see here. So what do you expect, Jason Light? He's going to fall in line, obviously. And I don't think Light wants Antonio Brown either. And I still haven't seen Brady talk about Brown. There's this inference that they're best buddies, that Brady wants Brown on his team, but
Ira, they cut the damn news conference short, the teleconference. What the hell was that?
I know.
Nobody's got anything to do. We couldn't even ask him a bunch of questions. Come on.
Lee, if it's true that if it was up to Brady, Antonio Brown would be on this team, doesn't that in some way mitigate against that report from 2-3 weeks ago that Brady's going to have basically control over the roster and what Brady says goes? And so, this Antonio Brown thing might be a test case right now. I didn't believe that story to begin with. Brady might get a piece of the team. Brady's going to get control over the roster. Yeah, he's going to have input. Lee, he's going to have input. It's Tom Brady. But he's not going to dictate things that this organization's going to do. He's not going to dictate who they draft. I think that's way overblown, Lee.
I like it when you were on Toledo Radio. Toledo, hello. And you used the following phrase. I loved it. When did Brady have this unshakable bond that he has to play with Brown? I love the term unshakable bond. And I mean, you didn't see him stomp. You didn't see him stomp out of Patriot Plaza, wherever the hell they call that complex, when they cut Brown. You didn't see him throw a fit or anything. No, he continued to play.
Ira, I still say that there's two parts of the Antonio Brown thing. One, he's going to be suspended, so he's not even going to be eligible for so long that it's just moot.
Right.
And if there's an injury, if the Bucs have an injury and they're 8-4, oh, God willing, that would be amazing. But let's say they're 8-4 and Mike Evans blows a hamstring and he's going to be out 6 weeks. You know, things change in a hurry when you're smelling a Super Bowl. So I'll just say that.
You are right, Steve. You are right.
I wanted to ask you this, Ira. You know, you talked about the pressure on this team. The night games are coming. We know that. The schedule should be out in a few weeks. And your beloved Chiefs, of course, are going to play on opening night. There was some speculation in the Associated Press that the Chiefs might, NFL networks, of course, might break a little protocol because they run the league. As league says, it's all about the TV money. If the TV stations, if the network wants to pick the Chiefs at the Bucks for NFL's opening night, Mahomes, Brady, rematch from the playoffs, and just all the fun and pageantry that would be, that might happen. And that's going to be such immense pressure on the Bucks. Do you think that would happen, and what are your thoughts about that?
Well, shouldn't the Chiefs get to open at home, Isbits? I mean, well, what's going on here?
The NFL makes the rules. The TV stations make the rules, and you know that. The network execs.
Remember 2004?
I do. 2003. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah,
I remember that. And
just to fill people in, the Bucks were the defending champions.
That's right.
Monday Night Football, they open on the road.
And that's right, and they kicked Philly's ass that night too. But, you know, Steve, that's a very dramatic opening. You could also have them playing the Ravens, Lamar Jackson and Mahomes. That's not too shabby. And the Chiefs and Ravens have played, I believe, each of the last 2 years. Chiefs have won both games narrowly. They've been shootouts. That's not bad. Of course, they could have a rematch against the Niners. But, you know, normally you would never even consider, the Bucks a scenario with the world champion Chiefs. Never. Everything has changed. And it's a reflection that we're even having this discussion, Lee, and that it's realistic. It shows how much the landscape's changed around one Buck place. I got to tell you guys, everybody that counts at one Buck place, everybody that counts, is so thrilled about this newfound relevance of this franchise. You cannot overstate the effect that Brady's addition has had on everybody from the top on down. Can't overstate it.
Who have you been talking to, Ira? Spill it.
Can't overstate it, gentlemen. Can't overstate it.
Here's one for you, Ira, about the AT speculating that the Bucks host Thursday Night Football game to open the season against the Chiefs. And I emailed this to Steve shortly after this, you know, he published the story. The Royals and the Chiefs share a giant parking lot. For people who've never been there, it's the Truman Sports Complex, they call it. And so they share this giant parking lot, and as a result, it's almost impossible for the Royals and the Chiefs to have a game, a same day have a game. It would just be out of control. So about 3 weeks ago, it kind of flew under the radar. About 3 weeks ago, September 10th, which is the Thursday opening night scheduled as we speak, the Royals vacated a home game, and the game that was scheduled against the A's, they moved it up for a doubleheader on a Tuesday night. We all know how much baseball hates doubleheaders. So, to me, that was a tip-off. That was a tip-off that they vacated the home date to have a doubleheader so that date would be open, presumably, for the Chiefs to have a home game.
You know, Steve, I've been criticized in these parts, but I think it's important to keep a little perspective, Steve. Just because the Super Bowl's in Tampa, I understand the euphoria going through town. And Brady, you know, is used to winning 11 games a year, and if he wins 10, it's a bad year. And I understand all of that. But the fact is, you know, this team hasn't even made the playoffs, you know, since 2007. So I just want to calm down a little bit, Steve, pump the brakes a little. I know the Super Bowl's looming at Raymond James Stadium, if there is an NFL season. But to think that Brady is going to vault the Bucs into the Super Bowl, past the Niners and past the Packers and past the Saints, and, you know, Steve, it doesn't work like that necessarily. Usually you got to take baby steps, and I'm happy taking a baby step and making the playoffs and taking my chances with number 12 in January. There's nothing wrong with that, Steve, but this idea that if the Bucs don't make it to the Super Bowl, this Brady gamble is a failure, I think that's nuts.
Ira, you, Lee, and I talked a couple of podcasts ago about how we see the Bucs now with the addition of Brady as a 10-win team in March, and we'll go from there. But a lot of people think, they honestly think, that if Brady was on last year's Bucs team, they would have won 12 games and gone all the way. And to me, it's like, and if you listen to Bruce Arians, he believes that too. And it, to me, it's getting a little bit out of control. I'm having a lot of fun with it because it's like, what next? Brady's going to save the baby sea turtles. He's going to end sinkholes. He's going to round up all the pythons in the Everglades. He's going to stop the love bug crisis. I mean, he's going to raise teacher pay. He's going to save the Tampa Bay Times. What else, Ira?
You know, save the Times.
You know who says that? People who want to blame Jameis Winston for everything that went wrong in 2019. And that's not fair. It's true they didn't have a running game. That's a fact. That's not Jameis Winston's fault. They didn't have a running game. They didn't play defense for the first 8-10 weeks. That's not Jameis Winston's fault. They couldn't make a kick down the stretch. Might have contributed to the last two losses. That's not Jameis Winston's fault. So, Lee, the 41 giveaways, bad. Really, really bad. No question about it. And you're not going to defend that.
No.
But this idea that Brady, you know, with the 2019 Bucks, it's a 12-win team that makes it to the Super Bowl, that's just crazy, Lee.
No, but to be honest, and I agree with you, I'm not arguing this point, but didn't Brian Glazer do a rare interview 2 or 3 months ago, and he pointed out the Bucks are going to host the Super Bowl, and he wants to be the first team to have a home Super Bowl game?
Well, there's no question what he wants, Lee. There's no question. But I get back to Steve's point. You know, win 10 games. You might win the division with 10 wins. You might not, but you got a chance. I think you got a 98% chance of making the playoffs, especially with the extra team per conference, if you win 10 games. And then you got Tom Brady going into January, and you got to like your chances at that point. But let's not get ahead of ourselves, Steve. You know, you're going to compare this defense to the San Francisco 49ers, even if they lost
You know what I'm saying. I agree with you. We all agree with you. It's just, to me, it's getting kind of comical, and it's only going to ramp up. It's only going to ramp up to new heights. And, of course, Brady will solve the lockout. Not lockout, but the players eventually getting locked out from the coronavirus. He'll buy land in Tampa and Pasco and build his own training facility. Who knows, Ira? It's getting
You know
comical.
What I think? You know, guys, you know what I think's overblown? I might be in the minority on this. I think it's overblown. People that are scared stiff, that a truncated, how do you like that one, DeKemper? Truncated OTAs and a truncated training camp is really going to put a damper on the Buck chances because they got a new quarterback. Guys, let's not go crazy here. This is Tom Brady. Tom Brady doesn't need a lot of time to get his timing down, even if he's got new people and new weapons. If it was a rookie quarterback, it'd be legitimate. This is Tom Brady. I think the Bucs would be in better shape than most teams, even if they're making the quarterback switch, because Brady's seen everything. He's worked with a million receivers. He made Chris Hogan a household name. Chris Hogan. Can you imagine what he's going to do with Chris Godwin?
I don't think Hogan.
Ira, you're falling into the same trap you were just chastising people about. Chris Godwin already is a household name. Every fantasy player in the world, tens of millions of them, knows Godwin. He made the Pro Bowl. He's top receiver. Everybody knows him already. That's part of this whole Jameis thing.
You know, what I'm saying is that I don't think a shortened OTAs and training camp is going to be a disadvantage to the Bucs. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Here's one for you, Ira. A question for you. I don't know if you read this or not. You know, it's looking pretty, I wouldn't say obvious, but certainly it doesn't look like there's going to be any OTAs because of the corona. And Arthur Blank told Peter King, or I should say Artie Blank, because he always butchers your name.
Artie
Blank.
I'm going
to purposely call him Artie Blank. He said he can see a shortened training camp and probably a shortened preseason, meaning they'll get rid of a game or two. Your thoughts?
Well, getting rid of a game or two in the preseason prompts a standing ovation from the pro football community. Nobody wants to see these. And they used to have six of them, guys. Six of them. Can you imagine? In the 60s, six of them. And the 70s. So nobody's going to cry about two or three preseason games instead of four. I think they'd like to keep the 16-game season, which is going to be going to 17. Probably in 2021. Look, Buck fans can't wait for this thing to start. No OTAs, fine. Training camp, Steve, I'll say it again. The Bucks better use their imagination. They can use a lottery system. They can do whatever they want. But a lot of people want to see Mr. Tom Brady do his thing in August, and they better be able to accommodate an expanded crowd.
All right, Sage.
Oh, by the way, Ira, part of the Artie Blank comments. He thought training camps would be closed to the fans.
Oh, I think that's a mistake.
Well, it's because of the corona.
Boy, if we're still dealing with that in August, guys, we're really in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, it's a big country, Ira. We don't know how many states will be dealing with it or areas and all that stuff. But there's a few angles here, Sage, that are very important. I totally disagree with you. I feel like screaming, Ira. But
of course.
Bill Curry Ford, we remind everybody, they present all of your work at joebucksfan.com. BillCurryFord.com is the website. BillCurrie, Bill Curry Ford, a Tampa tradition for 60 years, just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. They are open for business, an essential business. I know they service government vehicles, and of course, their beautiful showroom has lots of space for you to shop for a vehicle. No payments until summer, 0% financing for 84 months. Ford has rolled out incredible deals. You want to shop today. Bill Curry Ford. All right, Ira, this shortened season stuff, there's a couple layers here. First, I think it's part of the reason why people aren't buying tickets, because there's a percentage of people who are like, well, am I going to put my money down now before I know if I feel like sitting in a crowd? So there's that. But I think on a bigger scale, the Buccaneers, at least, unless you think it's a bunch of hooey, Ira, the Buccaneers, Bruce Arians, Jason Light, they've said it, and others believe it. The players believe it. They believe that being around Brady and watching him work and prepare and all this stuff is going to make them better. They really believe that. So if there is no offseason, how's he going to make the whole team better? How's he going to change the culture in April, in May, in June, and maybe July? How's he going to do that if he's not around anybody?
He can't have it both ways. He's going to do it in August.
That quickly?
That's how he's going to do it.
That fast?
That fast. That fast, baby. Mike Edwards needs 3 hours with Tom Brady to get his act together. O.J. Howard needs an hour and a half to figure out how to catch footballs and not let them skip off his hands. They're not going to start a regular season without having a training camp. That's not going to happen.
No.
And if baseball needs 6 weeks to get ready, can't the NFL at least be afforded 4 weeks? They're going to have time to bond, Steve, in training camp. I thought you were going to kill me for another thing I said. I'm glad you picked on that topic.
What was that, Ira?
Lee, what was I talking about before that? I can't remember. I thought he was going to slap me around.
Attendance?
The line at Publix?
No. No, all right. Continue
all right, Sage, and I don't rule it out. We'll call it as you heard it here first. I really think the Bucs are going to strongly consider going back to Disney for training camp. If you have Tom Brady, you want to start expanding your markets for future ticket buying, and the Orlando market's a huge market. It's still in Bucs country, and I think they'll look at that, and I think not only will they look at it, Disney will give them a phone call and say, hey, How would you like to bring Brady and the whole thing back here? We can house your players. We can sequester them. We can keep them on our grounds, corona-free, and all this stuff. I wouldn't be shocked if that happens, Ira.
I'm not rooting for that because I can't imagine the three of us being in the same house together. Because I know what happened when it was me, Cummings, and Fennelly. It was a circus. And the sight of Fennelly in his underwear sent me running out the training camp even an hour before I wanted to get there. Steve, I thought you were going to kill me when I said I'm in favor of expanding how many fans they're accommodating at training camp. I thought you were going to slap me around on that one.
No, I think it's a good thing, but I don't think it's possible because you've got that indoor facility. And I think it's just cheesy to be like, hey, you know, we seat 3,000 in the indoor facility, but we're going to let 4,000 out here and you can all fight it out and some of you can't get in. I just don't think they'll do that.
I see what you mean.
But that's just me.
There's going to be interest in training camp from a national perspective that we've never seen around here. Lee, all your favorites, Kay Adams, Schrager, Lockenfora, Rappaport, King, you know, Kerwin, Miller, they're all coming down. Shine. And Lee, you know, we're going to make sure that we get a hold of these people because we always, you know, we're always looking for different perspectives, Lee. Mm-hmm. And you were sitting there when I was talking to Peter King last year, remember?
Oh, yeah.
And we had a good conversation. King is a Hall of Fame voter. And by the way, after years of frustrating me because he didn't seem to be an advocate for John Lynch, Peter King has done a 180. And Peter King is a big-time proponent of John Lynch for the Hall of Fame. And a voice like that doesn't hurt in the room, Steve. Doesn't hurt.
By the way, Ira, there's one guy who's a big name in NFL media I've never seen down here. Never. Adam Schefter.
Adam Schefter. Interesting. I thought you were going to say Florio. I'm not sure Florio's been down
here. I've seen Florio down here before, for the Super Bowl. I've seen him down here. I've talked to him down here.
Adam Schefter's always where the action is, gentlemen. Always.
Ira, speaking of coronavirus and the season, actually, Mike Florio, who lives in West Virginia, he wrote a story proposing that possibly the NFL look at expanding a West Virginia resort that has some football facilities and 700 rooms into a compound where every team reports for the start of the season and stays sequestered for the entire year, and all games are played at this facility, which would have expanded fields, and basically the entire NFL season would be a reality show in West Virginia.
I believe Florio's been trying that tropic pressure a little too often, gentlemen. That beer's going to his head, and we love Florio, but sometimes he gets off on these tangents. And by the way, I don't know if you guys saw this, but last week he and Chris Sims, you know, they're trying to come up with these inventive topics, and they came up with, the 10 greatest wide receivers of all time. They each picked 5, and they went back and forth. And, of course, you know, we see the way these things go when they have these little contests. There's no perspective. You know, you look at the list, it's like nobody that's played before the year 2000. You know, like, football's never been played before that. I sent out a tweet after they were finished, and they proudly put their, you know, of course, Jerry Rice is number one, and Moss and Owens, and, you know, I understand all that. But I said, either of you guys ever heard of a guy named Lance Allworth? I mean, how about a little perspective, Steve, when they pick these teams? It's like, there was football before the year 2000, Stephen.
It's entertainment, Ira. It's entertainment.
Here you go, Ira. Here's one for you. And I've always thought this to myself. The first 3 or 4 years he played, he eventually blew out his knee and he got shipped off to the Packers. At the time, that was the NFL Siberia, not like it is now where that's a desired place. Back then, even John McKay used to rip about the Packers. He'd ship guys off to the Packers if they got on the bad side. But anyway, this guy for 3 or 4 years was the most dynamic wide receiver I've ever seen.
That Sterling Sharp? Sterling Sharp?
No. John Jefferson, Chargers.
Wow, John Jefferson.
He was, to me, the most dynamic wide receiver I've ever seen, and he blew out a knee, and he got in a contract hassle. They shipped him out to the Packers. He had a couple of good years. I think he was with Sterling Sharp for a couple of years. But, you know, he You never heard of him after he got to the Packers. But when he was with Eric Coryell, he was just unbelievable.
You know, he was so athletic and graceful. He reminded me of Lynn Swann, but he was better than Lynn Swann.
Exactly. He was very. You nailed it. He was like Lynn Swann, only more athletic, quicker, bigger.
Absolutely. Boy, they had some targets for Fouts to throw to. And Charlie Joyner, he was fabulous.
He was number three.
And Kellen Winslow, man, what a trio! It's going to remind Buck fans of O.J. Howard, Godwin, and Evans. There's no question about it.
Sage, speaking of O.J. Howard, this goes under the category of weird, and it really.
I think I've been a little. Have I been too rough on O.J. Howard, gentlemen? Have I been too rough?
Not really. You're not like me and Peyton Barber. No,
you're a little too. I think you're a little too high on Cameron Brate. I don't think you've been too rough on O.J. Howard. I mean,
Steve, he had one touchdown last year.
I understand. I'll say
this about O.J. Howard real quick, and it's not so much anti-O.J. Howard, but, you know, Arians once again is talking about O.J. Howard being effective in the passing game. Well, it's kind of hard to catch passes if you're told to stay in and not block.
Yes.
You know, it's kind of hard to catch a pass if you're not running a route.
Now, Ira, this is under the category of weird, and you know we hyperanalyze everything because we're looking for positives, negatives, angles, all the stuff that we care so deeply about. And so a week ago today, O.J. Howard was on SportsCenter, and he was interviewed from his house, and the news of Brady had already been out there for 6 days, officially for 4 days, I guess. And here's O.J. Howard. He's asked about Tom Brady. And he specifically says, they're asking him about his excitement level and all that stuff. He specifically says, a week ago today, that he had not had any conversations, not even by text, which Howard clarified himself, not even by text, with any teammates about Tom Brady coming to the Bucs. None. And Howard added that he hadn't heard from Brady, who allegedly asked the Bucs for his phone list of teammates. How do you play for the Bucs and be O.J. Howard and not contact one teammate by text or anybody contact you regarding Tom Brady getting freaking signed to the team? That's a weird red flag there, Ira. I don't know what it is, but what do you think about it?
Strange indeed. Strange indeed. No question about it. You would think he'd be one of the first guys that be on social media with his teammates. Lee, as far as not hearing from Brady himself, I'm curious to see, did Brady reach out to Buccaneers? I'm not even sure about that.
Yeah, he reached out to Godwin almost immediately. Godwin talked about that. He did an interview, Godwin did. And Godwin said Brady called him up, and they talked for a while. So we know that he called Godwin. So if he called Godwin, you figure he also called Evans. So why didn't he call O.J. Howard? And just to add on to that, I know everybody's sick of hearing about Jameis, but one of the first phone calls, or I should say one of the first texts O.J. Howard got when he was drafted by the Bucs was from Jameis.
You know, I think you and I have to say between the two of us that we know for a fact in terms of the drafting of O.J. Howard, Dirk Cutter played a significant role in that. Cutter was enthralled. Absolutely enthralled with O.J. Howard's physical traits, some of the catches he made at Alabama. Not necessarily the body of work, but some of the athletic plays that you don't normally see from a tight end of Howard's size. Cutter was obsessed with O.J. Howard. I don't know exactly for sure, Steve, what role that played in selecting Howard. And we all know who was lurking there. Behind O.J. Howard, a guy named Dalvin Cook, who if they would have drafted, we wouldn't be talking about the need for getting a running back right now. See, that's the ramifications of certain draft picks. Howard's not a bust, guys, but I'll tell you what. We talked about how big a year this is for Donovan Smith. If Howard doesn't up his game, he's playing his last season for the Tampa Bay Bucs, not a doubt in our minds.
When you look at O.J. Howard and that draft pick, you start to wonder, just because that's what we do, you start to wonder, how did he fall to number 19? That was the talk at the time. How could he fall to the Bucs so far? Well, maybe we're starting to see why.
That's a great point, Steve. Great point.
So, Sage, I don't know. I can't believe this is so bizarre to me that just on a personal level that you don't text anybody about Tom Brady signing. It's just bizarre. This is one story, Ira, I wanted to run by you because it's so much fun and it deals with the nonsense that we deal with all the time with owners and general managers. Well, not owners in our case, really, but owners and general managers and coaches throwing around a lot of BS. Bill Polian was on Sirius last week. And his quote was, "I suspect Bruce Arians was fudging." And he basically came out and said, well, you know, I used to talk to Bruce every week on the air here on Sirius, and he would, you know, sort of cover for Jameis, and he'd say, you know, this pick wasn't his fault. And then Polian goes on to say, I suspect Bruce was fudging because he was raised in this game like I was, old school, where, you know, you don't criticize the quarterback publicly. But eventually Bruce gave in and started to criticize him late in the year, and I could tell that he just wasn't getting the improvement in production that he thought. You know, it was very telling for Polian to say something like that, to basically say, hey, yeah, coach was bullshitting us all year long, you know, until the end. What do you think of that?
You know, I got a good, accurate sports analogy for that. Lee, I covered the Lightning for 2 years. They stunk, 1999 to 2001. And they stunk, and they would, you know, they play 40 road games, and they'd win about 7. Now, I'm not making that up. So you can imagine the depression of being on the road with these guys. And being around hockey people, guys, even when the goaltender, and you're talking about the quarterback position, Steve, when the goaltender sucked and everybody could see it, and the fans and the media and the teammates could see it, that the guy let in a couple of soft goals and cost them a game. When it came to the post-game press conference, the coach would never criticize the goalie. There was something about that position that you got to keep that guy's confidence up. You know, and if a forward or a defenseman had a bad game, they had no problem ripping the guy. Oh, what a giveaway, man. Terrible. Oh, that guy didn't show up tonight. They never said it about the goalie. I always thought it was curious. And, Steve, the goalie in football is the quarterback. I mean, you know, you got a good goalie, you got a pretty damn good chance to win, especially in the playoffs. Same's true. Not all positions are equal. Don't believe any of this nonsense. And, you know, quarterback's the glamour position. Well, goaltender's the biggest position in hockey. You got a bad one, you got no chance. Zero. And I think Polian's right. Now, Steve, you said the other week, and I slapped you down because you needed to be slapped down. You said that the Arians was brutal on Jameis Winston all season, and I stopped you right then and there. I said, Steve, that's not true. And Lee, you were there for every press conference.
Now, what I said was the last 2 months, not the last 2 months of the season. I meant the last 2 months since the season ended.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well,
I'm slapping you back.
They slapped me back. Something that I said as a matter of conjecture 2 months ago, it's no longer a matter of conjecture, Lee. Everything changed for Jameis Winston and this franchise the final two games of the season. Nobody can deny it. That's what happened. Whether you agree with Arians' assessment or not, he didn't look at Winston the same way, and it carried on to that, you know, postseason sit-down with the Glazers. Now we know what Arian said to the Glazers. We got to do better. We got to upgrade. So what do
you
say?
You know what? I was thinking about this the other day. And by the way, you're absolutely right, Ira. The last two games did Jameson, no doubt about it. Arians didn't make a point that, you know, Jameis was still in the picture until they got Brady. And I know Arians has said Bridgewater was door number two, Brady was door number one.
Right.
I'm not so sure Bridgewater was coming in, regardless, because his buddy, the his ex quarterback coach in New Orleans, is the offense coordinator in Charlotte.
Yes.
So I'm starting to think, had Brady turned down the Bucks, Jameis would still be the quarterback.
Well, Steve, the reason that it's true, it's not a falsehood, that Winston was still in the picture, you know, at the start of free agency. The reason is, if you can't do any better, you got Jameis Winston. That's the reason. You don't want to be left without a quarterback. You know, you don't want to be picking up a scrub, but it was clear, Steve, it still doesn't change the fact that they were willing to let Winston hit free agency. And once you make that decision, Once you make it, you have to assume that somebody's going to come after him. It didn't happen, but they didn't have airtight intel that that was going to happen. And it's still shocking that he's still out there, Steve. Shocking.
And you talked about the intelligence, Ira. I'm going to take you back to where we were early in the podcast. This is going to be a film-focused draft. I think it was about, I think it might have been 2 weeks ago. Gil Brandt talked about that on Sirius NFL Radio and how he's been calling around the league, talking to different GMs, and they're all telling him, hey, I'm getting more hands-on than ever before. And Jason Light actually brought that up today on ESPN when he was asked about that sort of, and he's like, well, I'm watching more film than ever, and the only people bugging me are my kids. They come in once in a while, but I don't have as many distractions at my office. And Light joked that maybe my staff doesn't like me as involved as I am this year. But this draft is very much going to be on that film study. What do you think of that? Do you think, and I got to put your feet to the fire on this question, Ira. Is that a good thing for the Bucks, Jason Light having a heavier hand in the draft as far as evaluating and grading players? Is that a good thing, or you don't know because you don't know his scouts? Or what's your gut? Does Light being more heavy-handed in the scouting realm, setting that board, is that good for the Bucks, the same, or worse?
The first thing that jumps out at me about this kind of surreal situation we're in regards to the draft is, Lee, you remember Light saying on more than one occasion, the mistakes that you make most of the time are from the neck up. Remember that, Lee? He said it many times. And here I think that could be exaggerated, especially with the later rounds, in terms of if you're relying more and more on tape than you ever have before, rather than a well-rounded portfolio and a deep dive into a potential prospect. Lee, I think there's more of a potential for a mistake in terms of character, how motivated a guy is. I'm thinking that there's going to be more mistakes, not necessarily just from a Buck perspective, but, you know, tape doesn't lie, Lee, but it doesn't tell the complete story. And if Light's right about your busts happen in terms of attitude, intelligence, how competitive a guy is, Lee, that means to me there's going to be more mistakes in the draft than ever before.
Well, perhaps, but that doesn't also mean it's foolproof that if you interview a guy face-to-face that you're not getting blindsided or hoodwinked. A clear example is Austin Seferian Jack Wagon. I mean, a head case, if there was ever a head case, the Bucks spent a second-round pick on him. Steve and I are privy to some intel. If we ever let this out, oh, my gosh, it's going to make Lovey look like a bigger dunce than I'm already willing to admit that he is. Oh, my gosh. But at any rate, that's one example. And Dominic, I remember Mark Dominic a couple years ago on NFL Radio, he was saying how he flat out got conned by Myron Lewis. That Myron Lewis, you know, I love football, you know, I can't wait to get on the field. I work 80 hours a week just so I can get to the practice field. And once they got Myron Lewis in the building, it was pretty, and this is Dominic's words, not mine, it was pretty clear he just liked being part of the team and collecting a check. He didn't want to do anything else. And I know where you're coming from, Ira, and I don't fully disagree, but I'm also not willing to say just because these guys have had opportunities to get one-on-one interviews with them doesn't mean that they're knuckleheads. They're not knuckleheads.
Yeah, Ira, you know, I heard that Daquan Bowers, when he met with Mark Dominic, he brought his guitar and played a little song all about that he had written how much he loved football, and he sang it to them, and they drafted him.
Was it a blues song? Was it blues?
It was a blues song, but it pulled some Bette Midler lyrics. I'm sure you would have liked it very much. All right, Sage, a couple of things
Hey, Joe and Jimi Hendrix, huh?
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, where are you going with that guitar in your hand?
All right, Sage, I got to let the listeners know that at our next podcast, we will have a very special interview with a power player on the Buccaneers staff. Now, I've already got it recorded, so it's not like we have. I'm dropping this on you guys for the first time.
Why are you springing this on me on a podcast, Steve? Shouldn't I? Now I'm being treated like O.J. Howard with Tom Brady. I'm out of the loop.
It's to get your authentic reaction. Fans are going to hear from an important guy at One Buck Palace on the next podcast, and there's a lot of juicy stuff in there that I will send you the audio in advance, Ira, and you'll be able to talk about it and give your opinion. And of course,
good work, Steve. Good work. Good work. Good research.
Well, it's not as good as it sounds, but it is pretty good, and it is definitely worth listening to, so I'm excited for that. Our thanks to BigStormBrewery.com. Big Storm Brewery, they produce all the great Big Storm beers. Drink them up. You can pick them up, and they will deliver them from Pasco, from Clearwater, BigStormBrewery.com. And, of course, we thanked Bill Curry Ford for all of their great presentation of Ira's work. They're great friends, great family. BillCurryFord.com. Shop for those 0% offers. They'll blow your mind away. They really will.
Well, a little bit ago, I quoted Hey Joe from Jimi Hendrix, and I played around with the lyrics. I shouldn't have played around with the lyrics. The original lyrics were perfect for Daquan Bowers. Hey Joe, where are you going with that gun in your hand?
Ira, the final thoughts.
That's what the security guard said at JFK. Or LaGuardia, excuse me, LaGuardia.
Ira, your thoughts for the good people of Tampa Bay, many who are suffering for various reasons, health, or they lost a job, or they're losing some pay. I know your brethren at the Tampa Bay Times are in that boat. They've cut the newspaper back. Bucks fans, of course, are in a good state. They're happy with their fandom right now, most of them anyway, except for the Jameis lovers. What words of wisdom do you want to leave fans with today?
Well, along the lines of adversity reveals character, I think one of the things that we can take a little pride in is I think the everyday acts of kindness, Lee, that you're hearing about, and I experience it myself. Going out for a walk, me and my wife with little Cosmo, all of a sudden, I think people are banding together a little bit. They're keeping their physical distance, but you get a smile, you get a hello. I think people are realizing we are truly in this together against this pandemic. And I think the only way we can mitigate how bad this can get is by being, resourceful, respectful to one another. It's not the time for recriminations. It's not the time to say whose fault it is. It's time to get together and get that offensive tackle at number 14, gentlemen. We're out of here.